Hey, and welcome back to another exciting episode of Packs Your Feature Editor. I have two fabulous guests, not one, but two, who have a great short. Go find it. I have Aiden Kennedy and Aaron Peacock, Inklings, Tall Tales, Short Films. Welcome back to the show, guys. Thank you for sending this to me. Guys, it's coming out on Bell 5 if you're Canadian. You have no excuse but to find this. They'll tell us more at the end, I promise, but make sure you watch it.
You bet.
Yeah, thanks so much for having us.
So let's start at the beginning. Port Hope again, guys? Really?
Port Hope yet?
Yeah, well, I mean, this is a lot to do with the fact that the Bell, who funded this particular series, so it's a series for Bell, and it's four episodes, but it actually sort of is made up of five short films. So you're not wrong in saying that it's short films.
That so is this kind is of only our, the first one?
Well, I don't know which one you saw, but we sent you the link to everything, but it might be that the showcase, maybe you didn't see the other ones in the showcase.
Oh, I only watched one.
Which one did you see?
What with this? You want me to ruin it?
Which one you saw? Well, we can talk more about that one, which is absolutely
okay.
Fine.
That's what I was. I didn't know there were more. I'm pissed off now because I would have watched them all.
So it'll be a nice tease for you.
Yeah, it is. The one I watched is got a guy discussing things over his head, and then it goes to a couple on a retreat. Does that help you out? I don't know what one this one's called.
Yeah. That one is, that's our pilot episode. It's called Pale Blue Mary Lou.
Okay, so then we're going to discuss Pale Blue Mary Lou. Then we're going to come back and discuss the next four.
Sure.
One after another, because I like to consider. Let's discuss this one first, because I didn't know there were more to watch.
Oh, yeah.
I would have watched them. So, okay. We'll get into that later. So, I want to say, from your first film to this film, I see a huge difference in shooting.
Yeah.
Now, you guys, I would say, have grown. Did you guys switch cameras on me? Because this is clean compared to the first one. The first one was very grainy, looked like almost like a found footage film. And this is clean, like almost movie quality shots.
Well, so the first short that you're referring to, which is Colin Carvey's Long Halloween, it was meant to look like a movie from the 30s. So
right.
We applied a lot of kind of grain and then some stuff to sort of make the lenses look older. We as we decided, because I was saying there's sort of five stories that we told. Each one of them in the show, we decided on a different aesthetic. So in this particular case with Pale Blue Mary Lou, one of our big sort of inspirations were the movies of Michael Powell and Emmerich Pressburger, who were, British filmmakers in the 40s, who made these like really beautiful, sumptuous color, Technicolor movies, right? And very romantic movies. And so we were trying to recreate that. So I think that's probably what you're seeing, which is it's a very designed, deliberate, colorful look in this particular one.
Okay.
Just I was going to say, your point, Aaron, it is maybe the most, movie-like, if you want to use that sort of terminology. And you'll correct me if I'm wrong, Aaron's our DOP and co-DOP on this one, I think, and director of it. But there's some vintage lenses, I think, particularly on this one.
That's the other thing. We used Soviet-era vintage lenses. There's one called a Helios 44-2, and it's a 58mm, so it's a nice portrait lens. And when you put somebody in focus in front of a lot of different light sources behind them, it creates this swirly bokeh look. And that's probably what you're seeing as well. It's a very classic kind of Hollywood movie look.
Well, I like it. Keep it up. Okay, second thing, at the beginning of the, I would always call this a two-part short because you understand, you guys shot it, you know what I'm getting at.
Sure.
In the first part of the short, there's a guy talking and a little kid comes over and he fixes the shirt.
Yeah. Right.
Was that planned?
None of that was planned. So this is a neighbor of Aaron's, and I'll flesh out the story. But this is a neighbor of Aaron's, and it's inspired that sequence of the episode. And every episode has that, so they all open with this sort of interview style, and it's in style of what's the Vernon, Florida, Aaron?
Vernon, Florida, which is a movie by what is his name? I'm drawing a blank now, but the movie is Vernon, Florida, which was a movie Errol Morris, who did The Thin Blue Line made, where he went to this town in Vernon, Florida, that he was told. It was called Stump Town because people were cutting off their limbs to get insurance money. And he got there. He thought this would be a great subject for a documentary. And it's a very Florida story, right? So he gets to Florida and he pulls his cameras out and he's ready to make this Stump Town movie. And then it turns out nobody actually had done it. So he was stuck there and had to finish the project. And what he did is he just interviewed weirdos from the town. And I have always loved the interviews from that, because it's like you catch these people midlife, you know, midday, and they then have to sort of like spew out an anecdote. And they sometimes they exaggerate, and sometimes they get, you know, like go way over the top with it. But when we pitched this show to Bell, we originally had this like wraparound idea, which was we were going to introduce all of the authors that had written these stories, because we're very influenced by short story writing. And it got to be, when we finally came around to like kind of developing the show, we went, that's way too much to shoot. And so our alternative pitch was, let's do Vernon Florida opening. So that is my next, my kind of next door neighbor. And that is his son. And yeah, they're, they
yeah,
are.
So like all these very verite interviews. And like Aaron said, his next door neighbor has four boys. And we knew if we just pointed the camera and said like, hey, you kids go play on the trampoline, we'd get something. So the fact that his neighbor came out, his neighbor was such a good sport, really played it up. It was awesome for us. Had, you know, the drink in his hand. He's kind of got there's a Trailer Park Boys vibe to that. And yeah, his son just came over and we were like, oh, goal. We knew exactly we wanted something like that. We knew it would happen, but we just didn't know what would happen exactly.
We goosed the sound of the ice cubes just a little bit.
Do you guys have problems finding actors in Port Hope?
Well, so funny you should say that. So no. And the reason, and I would say this to anybody that is trying to do, like, if you're going into the dramatic arts, whether or not you're making a short film or you want to put on a play, whatever, go to your local coffee shop, because almost consistently across the board, your local coffee shop is filled with the artists that have to have a day job. And so we, well, you notice that the kind of male lead in this particular episode is the same guy who played Colin in Colin Carvey.
How long ago do we do Colin Carvey?
Well, no, that's fair. It's been 20
I'm not going to remember. I am sorry. I watch hundreds of films a year.
Well, that's true. Yeah,
defense,
okay,
you enough. Only see his face at the end of the movie. And the
oh, okay. I'm like, should I remember that?
No, he's wearing a wig in that other one too. But so we brought him back, and he's actually in every episode because, you know, he's our good luck charm. But then the female lead is our barista, basically. And we had made another short with her about a year and a half ago now, and we said, and I actually wrote this part for her. I said, I've got an idea. I think you'd be really good in this kind of melancholic woman who's trying to figure out her relationship that gets kind of crazy towards the end, and she was game.
I don't think you sent that short to me.
Yeah, oh yeah. It's also got Taylor, who's the other actor.
Forgot to send me something?
Oh, well, no, you're right. We didn't send that short. It had a short festival run last year, and then it was turned into the last episode of this show. We did actually send it to you.
But the finding the actors locally, it also, like, we had the same philosophy when we made Colin Carvey, is that, like, these are also community art projects, and we want to make them with the community. And, like, every town's got your local theater troupe, right? A bunch of, like, ours in particular has a lot of volunteer actors in it, and we wanted to utilize all that talent. And a lot of them were like, I don't know, I've never done anything for screen, and they knocked it in the park. So it's like, there's all sorts of these talented people you can pull from just your backyard. It's really cool.
Okay, but let's talk about where you guys live. It's not a big place, people. It really is not. It's got the best burgers anywhere around here.
That's true. We still have Olympus Burger.
Still have Olympus Burger. Okay, then let's cut to the next thing. We have a drone shot.
Yeah.
Sure. Definitely a drone shot, which is fine. And then we have a camera in a car. Now I want to discuss how you guys placed your camera. I really like that work there.
Well, so that's a bit of a trick. So that camera is all in Aiden's garage. So
the car doesn't move.
The car doesn't move. There's one shot where the car is moving where we needed to see out the window, but everything else is rear projected. So we shot plates. So but there are a couple of reasons for that. We tried to shoot it with the car moving, and it ended up being a wasted day because it was just so hard to get everything shot. And also, we have very lovely actors, but lovely actors that sometimes don't have the longest attention span. And so we were trying to get the driving and the lines out at the same time. So it was like, this isn't happening. What we ended up doing is we went out and we shot plates of the sides of this roads. So like, you know, cameras out the window. And then we rear projected them with projectors in Aiden's garage and shot it like they would have done it in 1945. But we thought that also aesthetically works because we're recreating these old movies from the old Hollywood, right? So we thought it worked that way.
Yeah, any shot that doesn't have the actors was Aaron and I in a car. I would drive his car, and he would hop around different parts so you can get the inserts where you need them. But I want to step back. That drone shot might be the most difficult shot of the entire short.
Really? Because it looks just really nice.
Well, it was designed by Aaron to be this like great moment, right, where you're empty and then you reveal everything. You reveal the car, you reveal where they are. But we had to time it so perfectly. And we must have spent 3 hours just driving up that road again and again and again until we finally nailed
it. So I'm going to ask, what road are we up? Because, I mean, you're up 45, isn't it?
Well, it's a road that it's kind of a I can't say exactly what road because there's somebody we know out there that would refuse to let us to reveal where they lived. But but I'm happy to say that it's near Gore's Landing and it's on the way to Rice Lake. So when you see the lake in the background. So
we're going to get there. We're going to get to Rice Lake. It's on my list. Okay. We've introduced music finally. We finally get some music in the show.
Sure. So, yeah.
What's the music going on? Who did it? What's going on with it?
So a lot. There are two ideas happening here. So like there's a I'm going to tease that there's a sci-fi element because the premise of this short, right, is that this couple is sort of litigating their relationship while they're on a trip to the cottage together, right? They're deciding whether or not they're going to get married. And what's sort of played out throughout the whole story is that there is something bigger than them watching them, something science fiction-y watching them. And then that gets revealed towards the end. And the question was music. So I had two ideas. I was thinking about Clair de Lune, which is another Debussy track. And if you remember back in Colin Carvey 3 years ago, I used a bunch of his music. And that Clair de Lune is obviously a reference to the moon. So there's a spacey element to it. And then I wanted to also have it be an electronic version of that song to represent the sci-fi kind of droning sci-fi element. So I found it's actually not that song. It's another piece by him. But I found a piece by him that was done on a synthesizer, and then the rest of the music is sort of is synthesizer music, so that it falls in place with that.
Okay, so we finally get to the cottage where we're going with our little road trip. And now, whose cottage did you guys steal this time?
So Aiden, you want to do this one?
Yeah, we got very lucky. So again, the coffee shop, one of the co-owners of the coffee shop we've got a great relationship with, and we were searching out for cottages and putting out the word, and we thought, like, who's going to own a cottage? Well, someone who owns a pretty successful business, maybe. So we went and found a guy, and we asked him and said, hey, like, you're shot in the dark. Can we use your cottage for like 2 days? And he's like, absolutely. So we went out there. We did our location scout. It was perfect. They had a house next to the cottage too. So we even had like holding with air conditioning and stuff. And then found this cabin that like is just perfect. If you were, you know, doing Evil Dead, it'd be this perfect cabin. A little small for that, but great cabin. Lots of light in it that we could, lots of ways we could add lights because it had these rooms that didn't have like walls going up to the ceiling, so we could put lights in the rooms, shine them over the wall, and hide the light stand in another room.
I'm not afraid, Aiden, to say who it was. So if you're familiar with Port Hope, the owner of Happenstance is Ian Everdahl, and he gave us Zach Copeland's name, and Zach is the manager of that restaurant. And so it was Zach gave us, let's give him a shout out. He gave us the location.
They held Zach and Miranda. Co, another company, and his partner Miranda. They were so gracious too. Like, they left their house for 2 days. They said, no, have free run of it, guys. Like, we're going to go elsewhere. And they were it was on the market at the time. They were trying to sell it. And they're like, we'll pull the sign down. We won't book any showings. Like, it is yours. Do whatever you need to do. It had the dock we needed. It had, like I said, another house for holding. It had the big a lawn area that you don't see entirely in the short, but for them, you know, at the end, there's some action we take outside the cabin. So like, it fit all the needs. The one sort of, not even drawback, and we'll kind of get to a scene later, but the cabin is small and very hot. And we shot this mid-July last year, 2025, and maybe the two hottest days of the entire month.
Oh, the cottage looks hot. I will
Oh, it's hot. So
100%. I love spoiling in there.
we've got the two actors in there. We've got the crew in there, which is just a small crew of three or four of us, depending on the time.
Not
And
to
for the
mention, me with undiagnosed blood sugar issues.
Oh, great,
Yeah.
great.
Getting sick. And of course, like we gotta turn the air conditioning off for the sound. So like every you like as we'll see, we'll get to the scene where you can tell people are just sweltering. But it was a gorgeous looking cottage, like nice wood walls.
But it is part of the reason we added a shot in there where the air conditioning explodes, because we knew that if we got the air conditioning unit in the background of a shot, there needed to be an explanation that it wasn't on because everyone was melting.
Okay. Now, was there a re okay, two things. The Ring Rising. I did watch it twice. You guys either cut something or I missed something. How did you do it?
So yeah, there's a scene where our main character is practicing with a ring, practicing his proposal, and then
Right.
it gets lifted up into the air. And it's very simple. It's just like it's green screen ring element with a drone shot. We actually tend not to use a lot of drone in our stuff because drone has become, you watch a lot of shorts and a lot of like stuff from festivals, so you know what I'm talking about, where
I do.
once everybody was able to easily do a drone shot, it started to get a little overused,
Oh, it's
and
still
it's still overused. And
overused.
so this particular use of drone in our short, I think, is very purposeful because it's meant to be the viewpoint of something watching them. And I
Yes.
don't even think if it, I'm trying to think, and I don't think there's any drone in any of the other episodes other than very, very specific shots, right?
Yeah, we don't use it as like, your general establishing stuff. It's really designed in every one of these shorts to be something very specific.
And I think the other part of that is that the storytelling that we're trying to do is grounded. Like it's meant to be these like character p pieces between two characters. So it just doesn't feel like you want to always be floating over them. But in this case, yeah, that's what we did. It was just green screen, and we had a day in Aiden's basement where we had the green screen up, and we just shot ostensibly stills, but we did like some light effects so that there was flashing lights, so it looked like it was sort of traveling through the speckled light of the trees, and that's how we pulled off that shot.
This might be a weird question, but why was the ring so big? Is that the
Oh.
only ring? Because it was confusing me why the ring. Because what you did later with it, is that why it was so big?
Oh, in that, so like there's a whole kind of gag in the middle of the story that the ring is too big for the
Yes.
girlfriend's finger, right? Well, yes, it is sort of like, for the plot, because later on she needs to
Okay.
make a bad decision about where to put the ring.
Yes,
But the
that's
other part
what I
of
was
it,
wondering.
well, the other part of it is that Travis, which is the boyfriend, I think it's also indicative of him as a character that he wouldn't think about something like that. He's all heart and no head. And so
True, true.
he went and got the ring, but he didn't think to get the ring sized, right?
Uh, too
And it
much
also,
enthusiasm.
yeah, too much enthusiasm. And also, like, the whole thing was, like, not entirely inspired by this, but when Aiden proposed to his wife, I was with him when he bought the ring, right? And did you have to get the ring resized? I'm trying to remember.
I don't know. I think I found a covert way to find the size, as most prospective fiancés try to do, or your fiance or your partner will just tell you, be like, "Hey, you're dropping hints."
This is what the ring I want, and this is the size it needs to be. But yeah,
Right.
if the in-story reason is that Travis is a goofball that would not think about that.
But I would say at that point too, like in story, you also knowing the Mary Lou character and what her feelings are towards the proposal, right? It does make it would make it makes sense that he wouldn't be able to go and ask that outright. Like he would have to
True, I
be
accept
covert,
that.
or he would have to be just ignorant of it.
Yeah, right.
Okay. Where did the bikini idea come from?
Well, so you'll notice that a lot of so in this story here, Travis, they do a
Well, I
switcheroo,
wasn't going to ruin it. I kind of thought it was funny. It was a nice joke. That's why
oh,
I was
okay. So
kind of
I
this.
should have been more
I
okay.
gave you a nice clean answer there to question. You screwed. That's your choice.
Okay. Well, what I'll say is that it's all a lot of the gags in this, the jokes, right, are based on tropes from other sci-fi movies in this genre. So
Okay.
there's like a famous movie, Steven Spielberg movie with Richard Dreyfuss, where he gets all burnt up in it, right? And so we wanted to make the joke version of our character being burnt up, and we thought that having funny tan lines would be the way to do it. It's like a moment of a visual, like a visual gag later on when it gets revealed, you know, the damage that's done.
Yeah, I think it also was another character beat for Travis, right? Like you get the sense of the fun, playful golden retriever kind of qualities he has, in contrast to her, you know, colder, not colder. That's not maybe the nice way to put it, but you know, it's more standoffish.
Well,
approach.
She's melancholic, is what
melancholic,
I always say.
Right? Yeah, I will say about the bikini though is that a little BTS on it. So Aaron. Painstakingly, and this will be just for you because your listeners, but I'll explain it. Painstakingly glued white dots all over the bikini, as you can see there. And the first time Travis, our actor, jumped in the water, every dot came off.
And the reason, by the way, because I think we're going to give this joke away because we've given so much away, is that the boy wears the girl's bikini. But yes. Here's the thing that if your listeners don't know this, they should know. There is not enough room in a woman's bikini for a guy's junk.
No, so, no way. There's no way.
And I, why would I know that? I've never purchased a bikini to wear. And then upon purchasing the bikini, we sent it to Taylor to try on. He said, this is not happening unless this movie's rated something way differently than what it will be. So we had to then make the bottoms. That's what we had to do.
Makes sense. Okay. I presume the water was super warm because it's July.
No. No. Whoa. In fact, here's the in fact to that. So they jump in the water and both I handed this script. Well, I want to back it up because I want to explain that this script is every script that we shot for this TV show was something that I had developed over the course of the past almost 10 years now. So this particular script was written right after Colin Carvey's Long Halloween for these two actors during COVID. No, I guess it was post COVID, but it was. But very much with COVID on my mind, like they like and also like all the kind of the world was feeling heavy. And so like having a character that was kind of depressed, and another character that was trying to cheer them up. That was where that came from. But anyway, they had this script for so long. They knew exactly what was required of them, including getting into a lake. And the moment they both got into the lake, I found that neither of them could swim really. And not only that, but our actor who played Travis Taylor was really uncomfortable in deep water. Yeah, it was. Aiden, do you want to elaborate on this?
They don't swim. I'm sorry. You guys live in Port Hope. There's lots of water around Port Hope. I'm just being honest.
We know. We were just surprised. Like Aaron said, immediately both of them made it clear they were very uncomfortable in this lake. So we try to get them in and out, but we also, as you can see, there are shots where one of the characters has to be far enough from the dock for things to, you know, work and make sense.
Yes.
So we had to be like, swim out a little farther, and then like,
right.
He'd just tread there, and he would keep slowly starting to float back towards the dock. Like, no, you just need to stay still in the water there.
We should have just had a stick. We could have just poked him and pushed him out. Yeah.
And then we were able for the other actor, our actress, we flipped things around. So she was just sort of standing in some water next to the dock, but the way it's cut and shot makes it feel like you're, you know, in the right spots everywhere. But yeah, I mean, for the heat of the day, the water was the least refreshing. Although at that point, they weren't as hot as they were about to get. So they didn't know how refreshing it was.
Yeah. If you watch the movie, it was pretty much shot in order. So.
Oh, okay. You never know.
It wasn't on purpose. It was this that we had this one location and the light needed to be where it needed to be for each part of the day because it kind of takes place over a day. And then there was a reshoot day where we came back and picked stuff up. But really, that first day, right? Like, it was all just in order, I think.
Yeah, and part of the reason is also, like, there's some makeup on one of the characters. Well, both of them have some different sort of makeup and prop things going on. And so we didn't want to be in a situation where, like, we apply the makeup and you get in the water and it washes off. And we apply the makeup and then you got to wash it off for another scene. So we shot it more or less chronologically as well because we have a makeup artist there, but, you know, small budgets. The makeup artist was going to be there for a couple hours and do the makeup once and then do some touch-ups before she left. And we didn't want to, you know, get in a position where you're handcuffed and I had to do the makeup, which eventually happened later on in the short. So if you have a really keen eye, the makeup's probably not as good later on as it is there.
Okay, well, that was one of my questions. Who did the makeup? Because I thought it was really good.
So our makeup artist was a woman named Aisha Hannigan. Aisha is another barista of ours
at the same coffee shop.
Yeah, but well, I would say like a multidisciplinary artist. Like, she does hair. I think she's acted when she was a kid. She's a musician. She's a part of the what they call, the family calls it Clan Hannigan, right? Which is Stefan Hannigan and Saskia Tompkins. And if you know any local musicians, they are prominent here in town. And so she's one member of that family. They're like Europe. I was going to say European Von Trapps, but I guess the Von Trapps were European.
They are.
The Irish Von Trapps.
Yeah. The Irish Von Trapps. The Irish English Von Trapps.
Yeah. So, yeah, we reached out to people, and I think we were at the coffee shop one day and probably just saying, like, hey, we need someone. She's like, oh, I've done makeup for movies before. And we're like, okay. So we came out, and she did a test, and we said to her, like, what do you need? Like, what's the, you know, what's the most cost-effective way to do this? And it's, like, a lot of just, like, blush, I think. And I'm not going to get it right because I don't, you know, do a lot of my own makeup here. But a lot of just, like, rouge and stuff. And we threw the costume on, did a test. And we're like, it looks good. It's waterproof, rock and roll. And so, and then there's a couple of prosthetics as well that she was able to apply and blend in really well for us because we wanted to sell a makeup effect that sort of gets enhanced as the story goes on. So yeah, she was fantastic. Huge help.
It started with a sketch I did. I did a sketch of the character just with like pencil crayon and sent it to her and said, can you do this? And she said, yep. And then she went away and bought stuff. And here we are.
Yeah. What beer are they drinking?
They are drinking Church Key, Northumberland Ale.
Is Church Key still around?
Oh yeah.
I haven't had that in forever.
Yes, oh, we love Church Key.
They've been around for 26 years.
Are they still on that same road in the out of the church?
Up in Patrick's Corners, yep.
That's it, Patrick's Corners.
Yeah,
now, I'm old enough to remember when Patrick's Corners had a sign saying Worm Burgers.
I don't remember.
When I was a kid,
I know what you're talking about.
They used to have a store, and it had Worm and Burgers right underneath.
I had no cameras back then. Or something.
This is before cameras. I wouldn't have taken a photo. But that's what the store used to advertise, and Church Key was across the street.
Well, the story there is that our first client, I would argue, maybe second client when we started our videography business, which is how we pay the bills, was Church Key. And it's John from Church Key. And John has been a supporter of ours for 15 years now. He's a very good friend. And we try to get him into the shorts whenever we can. In fact, in the third episode, there's a gag where we use a picture of him. But when we can't get him in the short, we always get the beer. And you know, when you get a licensing to use like a big beer in a movie, you always have to ask them, do you like, they always ask you, is a villain or a hero drinking the beer? Because they always have an issue with who drinks it. And John says, everyone can enjoy Church Key, whether or not you're an evil ghost or you're a guy who's stressed out because he just got burnt up in the lake. And so we just have kind of carte blanche to use Church Key.
Oh, that is too funny. Now, the idea for the short, did it come from anybody's proposal or a wedding or anything, or it's just all out of your head?
Well, yeah, I think I would still say that it came from sort of like, you know, overthinking things during COVID times, because it's, when everything changes or everything shuts down, you start to ask yourself questions about what's important and why we do things, right? And in this particular case, the question was like, why do we go out of our way to spend a lot of money to do this thing that we call marriage when, you know, if you really like somebody, you're going to be with them no matter what. And Aiden, in the midst of me like thinking about this story, you got married. So there was like sort of that going on in the background. Not that this proposal is not how your proposal worked at all.
No, but yeah. I didn't drop the ring.
Like, I don't know if I would call you like a super romantic guy. Would you call yourself?
No, but, and I would say I am definitely have the golden retriever qualities that you see in Travis as well. So there's definitely an influence from that.
But what I was going to say is that you still, as far as I know, very much like being married. but you're not like somebody who probably, you know, sat around as a 12-year-old thinking one day I'll have a big wedding. And I guess that's the point, is that you realize that you have to make meaning in these things. It doesn't inherently exist. And that is the theme of the movie. It's about making meaning in these things and then using this big sci-fi thing around it, this sci-fi plot around it to kind of juice it up.
So costuming, you guys already told me a tiny bit about it, but I want a little bit more. Who made them?
In this case, it's pretty straightforward. The two main characters are, you know, in cottage wear, basically. Well, I see what you're saying because there's another costume coming up. But
That's the
our
one I'm talking about.
okay. Well, I'll give a quick shout out. Our female lead is wearing a shirt that says Cultivate on it. That's the Cultivate Festival. It's a festival that's been going on for 10 years in Port Hope, and we're their videographers, so that was a shout out for them. The costume at the end is a creature, is what I'll say. A sci-fi creature reveals themselves towards the end of the short, and it's all actually isn't it all Amazon stuff, really? We sort of made that one. Now, with the exception of the creature has a prop, which is a staff that has like kind of a multi-tool that is used for
Yes.
a bunch of somewhat nefarious things. That was designed and created by a very good friend of mine named Nick Marcuse, and I think his son Ben also helped. Nick is a guy that I've known for, I don't know, 25 years, something like that, and more than that. Went to grade school with his brother. And Nick said to me, he said, I'm a maker. I have always wanted to make props for movies. And this is the philosophy that we took throughout the making of this whole show. If someone said to us, we've always wanted to do something, we said, okay, here's your opportunity. And so I went into Nick's shop in his backyard and he made the staff. In fact, it's right here beside me. I'm not going to bother with it, but it's there. It's
So,
there. I
who
trust
is
me.
in the costume?
So,
That
costume the
was
number of people, but who's
really?
first?
It ended up being a number of people because there were like insert shots, but for the most part, it was my niece Piper, who was one of the girls that sang Colin Carvey's theme song at the end of Colin Carvey's Long
There
Halloween.
we go.
Yeah, so we needed someone with the right like stature, right? Like you don't want someone too tall. You want the fit that what that character is, right? There's sort of an aesthetic. So it's Aaron's niece, and then there's we have someone else who was we did some reshoots, so we have some feet played by another person, a hand by another person. It became a character by committee, but primarily Piper, yeah.
You played the alien's hand at one point, I
On the
believe.
hand of one bit, yeah.
I love it. Shooting at night on Rice Lake, okay? I know there's no lighting here at all. You can't even argue it. This is all you guys.
Yeah. So, well, that it's all us, but in actual fact, it's all our my co-DOP is a guy named Lee Foster and his company Foster Films. He was our lighting tech, and he brought all the light in. He had big ideas about how we should do it, and he, I would give him the big shout out for him. Our shout outs for him are that night shoot, which a lot of big blue, kind of classical looking moonlight, but he also lit the scene where they have an argument and all of the appliances start to shake. And that scene, I think, is maybe the most beautiful scene in the movie. It like really, really nice sort of looks like sunset, like dusk. And yeah, it's all Lee Foster.
Yeah, and big credit to Lee because he would have ideas for lights and where we each had 1,000 things in our mind and we'd be like, yeah, whatever you think, just go do it, right? And then we'd be like getting ready to the next scene, be like, no guys, like you need to have this one thing here. And he turned it on, like, okay, you were right. It's a good look.
I mean, like our tendency, because we work so quickly and we have a tendency to also design the movies so that we can work quickly and maybe get away with not so much lighting. And he said, no, if you do this, it elevates it. And so that's exactly it. There's the value there. The value of
Okay.
our friend.
From near the end, is there CGI here?
There's no CGI. No,
Nope.
there's some like, computer. We use the computer to cut things out, and like hey, there's some technology that you might be talking about that's
Yes.
actually a model. So
Oh,
we have
okay.
a yeah we had a friend of ours. His name is Mike Payette. Mike was a model maker, a professional model maker, or in that realm in Toronto back when they used to make models for movies instead of CG. And he worked on movies like Jason X. That's the big one that he talks about. And
I've seen
so
it.
once again, I said, who do we have at our disposal that might be interested in doing this? And Mike said, I'm all over it. So that's like some sort of like tiki. It's like a tiki dish of some sort that he then added all the technology to, and it's a spaceship. I don't mind saying that. It's a spaceship.
Yeah. And then again, another one of the elements that when we set up in my basement, we did a day of like green screen shoots, and it's that, and it's like It's on a it ro it actually rotates, like it's built practically to rotate. So it's one of us, it's me holding it up and just spinning it around, and it actually lights up too, like all the
Actually, you know
MBA you
what?
can see in the background
You
there.
can see it in the background of my shot
Oh,
there.
I can now.
Yeah,
Yes, I
but
do
it's
see
really
it.
cool to like be able to like the light, it lights up practically, which is like super cool. Yeah, it's just fun to use that stuff.
Okay. Whose home movies are these?
Ah, that's sick.
Oh, this is a great question. So, yeah, there's some home movies used in sort of a. So this scene is inspired by the movies of Ken Russell. So Ken Russell, you
Oh
probably
my
know, is
God,
doing.
I know who Ken Russell is.
So Tommy is like the big one, the Who, right? But he
Yeah, but
also
that's not
made
the crazy one.
well, so well, the one that I love the most is Altered States. That's the one that
Which is one I have not seen. I know which
it's
one you're
a.
talking.
It's a movie that is like batshit crazy, but at the same time, like really romantic
It's a
and
Ken
lovely.
Russell film. You know you're watching a Ken
Yeah.
Russell film.
You know
There's
what?
no
I'll admit
time.
too, I'll be honest, I haven't seen Altered States either. And Aaron actually gave everyone the homework. The one task of two movies to watch, it was Altered States and the first of the Before trilogy.
No, it was
Oh,
three.
best
Can I got
movie
it
ever. Oh,
ever.
sorry.
So the three movies, and this gives you a good sense of what the style of this movie is. It was the first of the Before trilogy.
Fantastic
Well, no,
film.
it might have been the second of the Before trilogy. It doesn't matter.
Still
It
fantastic.
was Altered States, and it was a Matter of Life and Death by Powell and Pressburger. Those were the three
I'm
movies I
sure
said.
I've seen,
Everyone,
I'd have to check. I've seen a good
yeah.
chunk of their catalog.
Well, that's about a couple where the guy dies, and he has to make his case to the heavenly court about whether or not he should stay on Earth
I
to be
have
with
seen
his.
it. I have
And so
seen
the
it.
idea, it's that romantic, but with like a big, larger than life element thing that we're doing in this that was inspired by that. But the home movies, here's the answer. So there's a big trip scene based on, inspired by Ken Russell. The home movies were stuff that I shot new on a friend's DV camera so that we had specific story points. They're Aiden's home movies. So that's our producer here that we're talking to. There are home movies from our lead actor, Taylor. And there are home movies from we had a specific editor hired just to do that sequence, a guy named Mike Morrig, who's a filmmaker from Peterborough, and it was his fiance's home movies. So it's a collection of all of them. And the coolest thing is, if you look closely, the home movies are supposed to represent kind of other relationships and other life moments that maybe
Yes.
the sci-fi creature is, you know, collecting. And the coolest thing is the ones that our actor Taylor Beatty gave us are actually Port Hope home movies. So if you look in the background, it's Port Hope, and that's it just adds another element to this, that if you know where to look, it's there's deep kind of rich tapestry going on here.
Okay, you've just perfectly going to hit my next question. The Gannon-Rostra Hotel, which you knew I was going to ask about.
Sure, yeah,
Because
the
I
Port
mean,
Hope landmark.
Port Hope landmark, I would say. How many times have you guys been here?
Have we
Seen it
been there
again?
to shoot or to
No,
drink?
just to drink.
Well, not so much in the past decade, but when we were like 20 to
That's what I
25, I
was
would
going for.
pretty frequently I would go to the Gannon. Yeah, but that's the point of that particular scene, which is like the characters sort of come back together at the Gannon, and there's even kind of a joke in there where he says, "You never liked going to the Gannon." Well, it's supposed to reference any small town bar. Like, it's not the Gannon just itself, but you know, when you live in an area, you grow tired of those landmarks, and you sort of at some point probably think you're a little bit better than those landmarks.
Oh,
And
yeah.
then there's a point where the nostalgia comes back, or at least the appreciation comes back, and then you can go back and go like, "No, I don't mind going to the Gannon again now." And that's what that scene's about. And that's why we picked that spot. Also, Rick, who owns the Gannon, who still owns the Gannon, super super nice guy, lovely dude, and he, you know, you can ask him for anything and he'd give you the shirt off his back. So it was an easy location for us as well.
Yeah,
So
I had to fight with them to give them. We said like we have $100 left in our budget. Can we give you $100? And I just sort of had to fight with the guy on the net. I'm like, no, take the $100, please. That's how great they were about it.
how was it returning that to the Gany?
Well, it was a fortuitous night because you never know, right? Like, we asked if we could come one night. It was like a weekday night because we tried to pick a night where there wasn't going to be a lot of people there. We don't want to get a bunch of sign off. And it happened to be like the point of the evening that it was actually empty. So we brought again all our coffee shop friends and their like friends and partners fill it up there. So it was kind of cool to like go in there and have the run of the place. We're like, we said to them, we're gonna hop on stage for 5 minutes, we'll get our shot, we'll get off because we don't want to be a nuisance. They got other stuff going on. We're like, now guys, have free run of it. Do whatever you need to. So like similar to Aaron, admit, like I haven't been there in 15 years or so. Like when I was at a college, I'd go there with friends, and that would be it. And yeah,
Well,
it's
I
it.
won't give the details, Zayden, but I'm very certain the last time you were there before that, you got kicked out.
I don't know whether someone tried to. I don't know if I got kicked out.
You don't have to, listen, you don't have to explain why I'm saying that. I'm just pretty certain you got kicked out.
Perhaps I wouldn't
Perhaps.
remember it if not. Either
Yeah,
way,
right.
but no, it's like it's fun to yeah. It's cool to like every town has this kind of landmark, right? And being able to like spotlight ours and go back to it and use it in a really fun way and use it a way for us is just a neat thing to be able to accomplish.
Okay, we're off to fun questions now. I think I've covered the whole film. I don't think there's anything I missed. If there is, please tell me now. I think I did a good job.
You've been thorough, and I'm sure we'll think of something as we go here.
Yeah, okay. Now, Aaron, you're a movie fanatic. I know you are, just by the way you talk about things.
For
Me and you
better
could
or for
probably
worse, yeah.
have like a 14-hour conversation and still have more to talk about
Sure.
film. Is there one film you have still not seen? And Aiden, same question for you.
Well,
One
I'll jump in
film.
first so Aaron can think about it because he might need some time.
Yeah.
There's lots of films. Like I said, I haven't seen Altered States.
I
I
wouldn't call
don't
that a
really.
big one.
No, well, what's my biggest omission I've never seen? That's a good question because I'm a cinephile, I'd say as well, but I'm also one who's not always seeking out like the biggest hit from 1952 or something like
See,
that.
that's me.
Yeah, I know. Like here's a small example. I thought is that I bought The Sound of Music years ago, and I've yet to ever watch it.
Well, really?
Yeah. I own
Oh
it.
my
It's
God.
sitting on my shelf downstairs. I have a nice
Aaron,
view
go
of
over to his house and just put the thing on so he
it.
can know what the
Yeah,
fuck's
I took a
happening.
hat
So,
off.
like,
Yeah. you referenced the Von Trapps. I don't
yes.
own them.
My answer to that is that I don't know if I could name a specific movie, but the what I find is that I have gaps in directors. So like I
Yes.
haven't seen enough Ingmar Bergman. Like
Neither have I.
I should see more of that because I because you know it's it, when we talk about somebody like that, we think it's homework, but in actual fact, like he made kind of some of the movies were kind of fantasy movies and some of them were comedies. And so I need to get over that sort of hump and go, yeah, no, I'll go and rent them or see them on Criterion or whatever
Oh.
and dig in there.
Now you've hit on my thing. If you listen to my show, I do it one director until I'm done, and then I move
Right.
on to the next one. So I am doing exactly what you said, filling in my gaps. I don't care what they've done, I'll watch it. Right now we're doing Minelli, which
Oh
nobody
yeah.
does, so I'm watching every Minelli film I haven't seen. So I think I got about 15 left. My buddy's killing me. He's terrible. I would not recommend it to anybody,
Where
but
are you at?
I'm at Cobwebs, so I'm 1955, so I've done all
Oh,
the
so we're.
dance movies. So now
So
I'm in
that's
the
got to be getting to the
melodrama.
end, right?
Yes, I'm getting the melodrama movies.
Yeah, yeah.
Isn't there something so gratifying though about just like when you watch as many movies as like we do and your audience does and the people you do, right? When you still discover something, it's like the greatest feeling in the world, right? It's like, oh my God, how have I lived my life without enter movie name here? And then it's just like it fills you up.
Okay, question number two. Besides Port Hope, where's the next place you guys are going to shoot? Or is it ever going to be outside of Port
It's
Hope?
going to be another town in Northumberland.
So, Petrick's
Well, so
Quarters?
we've done a lot of
We've
shooting
shot
in
lots of
Petrick's
Petrick's
Quarters. Yeah.
Quarters.
What I would say is that, and this is a kind of a general lesson to anybody that wants to make movies, at the level that we're doing, like just going out and doing it and trying it out, is that if you build good enough relationships in the community that you're from, then using your area does not feel like your hands are tied in any way. In fact, it's very liberating because we're in a very advantageous position where if we said to somebody we knew that owned a building that we wanted to shoot on the top of the building, they'd go, yeah, sure, guys, you're the guys that do that. And so in some ways we have more options than if you went to Toronto and tried to film because you got to deal with permits and you got to deal with all these people that don't want to be in the movie and you got to deal with
safety, and not that we're not safe, but you know what I'm saying. It's like there's a size of production that you get to, and a profile of production that you get to when you get to a bigger spot. And so we will continue to shoot this area until we can't shoot it anymore. But who knows? Like we had a script for a long time. I don't know what will become of it, but it was a road trip script. And the whole idea was that we would stop in different places, and that was the production value of the movie, which is, you know, how all road trip scripts work, but this had a bit of a twist to it. But anyway, that's something we could do down the road, is we could stop in different places and kind of show off Canada a bit.
Yeah, but to Aaron's point, like our community we develop here too, right? It gets people enthusiastic about being involved. So you're never in a position where you're putting someone out. Like if you want to use a restaurant, if you want to use a store, whatever, right? People are excited to be involved now. They've seen, especially like you work in an area, people see you sort of develop and grow. And so like our second episode is shot around the Baltimore area and the farm in Port Hope. Our third one shot around Port Hope and all in Brighton as well. It's like we're gonna shoot this place out until it's done. And
what I would also add to that is that I also think that this is the future of movie making, because we're losing the middle, right? We're losing like you can make a movie for nothing, which I guess is where we're at. We're still, you know, micro budget. You can make a movie for nothing, or you can make a movie for like $200 million, but we're losing the middle. And the future then is to figure out how you can do that micro budget thing in a smarter way. Like one of the big influences on me personally over the last couple of years was a movie that actually premiered the same year at Fantasia that our short did, Colin Carvey, which was Hundreds of Beavers, which is that was made by... Yeah, right. Great movie. A hilarious silent film, guys in like beaver costumes. And what I would say about it is like that proves to you what movies can be going forward, because they made that movie for $200,000, which is nothing to make a movie. And then they four-walled it. Like they did the festival run, but then they actually went out and they presented the movie in front of people to make them make the money on it. And they ended up making like millions of dollars on it. And not that the only goal is to make $1 million, but you have to have a sustainable model. Like we need to live, right? And so that's something that I could see this kind of thing that we're doing here, which is making movies in Port Hope, growing into. That we make a movie and we go on the road with it, and that's how we, you know, it's like you know, being a traveling performer like you would have in medieval times. It's kind of cool because we're going back to basics in some way.
Yeah, we're like the acting troupe in the Seventh Seal, right? We're just dragging our wagon along.
Hey, Ingmar Bergman.
Yeah. There you go. Second last question. Beside Olympus Burger, where else should I eat in Port Hope?
Do you have an answer to that, Aiden? Aiden is vegan, so he's got
very... Yeah, it's a harder one for me. I could still... Olympus Burger is still great because they have a vegan option for me.
They do?
Oh, yeah. So Port Hope, there's a lot of good, like, pubs in Port Hope. Thirsty Goose, Beamish. If you're looking for something, like, a little, like, elevated from that, places like Gusto are good. There's Ray Ray's, great food truck. They don't have a lot, I think, vegan stuff, but if you're not, delicious food. Port Hope's got a pretty good culinary scene. Gusto, I'd say, as a plant-based person, Gusto is my spot.
That's fun.
Gusto is good. Thirsty Goose for pub food. They're good wings at Thirsty Goose. That's okay. Where I play trivia. But if you want, there's a raw oyster bar and like elevated stuff like tartare and stuff like that, beef tartare at the 26, which is the restaurant that is in the back of the, what's the restaurant
Social.
Called?
The Social.
Yeah. It's now all one restaurant, I'm told. But anyway, the Social and the 26, that's the place to go.
Okay, before I let you go, Bell 5, let's, how did we get on this? Tell me a bit more. When's it premiering? Let's get into it.
Sure. So how we got on it was that, Bell 5 has this program to fund local programming. And we initially worked on a show called The Brawl Stars, which was, is that right? Brawl Stars? Yeah, Brawl Stars.
Brawl Stars, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Which was a show about, it took place in Durham region, and it was a show where they these three guys reenacted fights that had happened in Durham region and then told the stories of the fights. And this is where we first learned that Bell 5 TV 1 was handing out money to make this local programming. This sort of rolled forward. We ended up working on a show called The November Project and another show called In the Line of Fire and another show called, what's the
Racing
show
for Hope.
Called Racing for Hope. Sorry, Lee, that's your show. And then we said, how do we you know, take advantage of this in the nicest way possible, but also like it's an opportunity is really what I want to say. And we knew that we would want to do something that was very much us and something that gave us an opportunity for me to take some material that I had stewing for a long time and produce it. And so we applied, we did a pitch, and then they came back 9 months later and they said, you still want to do the show? We had done the two shows in the interim, like as producing teams and just working on the crews. And then we were off to the races and we did this over the course of a year. Where it premieres, it's Bell 5 TV 1, which is on your Bell box. So if you're a Bell subscriber, you get this. It's like in the local programming section. And it premieres on August 6th. But that's not the only premiere. That's where it premieres on the box, but we are also doing a hometown red carpet premiere at Ganaraska Brewing in Port Hope, also on August 6th. And that's at 8:30. And it will be, we'll have much of the cast and crew there. We're going to do a Q&A. We'll have popcorn and door prizes and stuff.
Open to the public.
And it is a kickoff to Port Hope's Arts Weekend, which is that weekend. So that's the story.
Yeah, and I'll just say, so on August 6th, all four episodes drop at the same time. So if you want to sit there and binge it, it's about an hour and 20 minutes if you watch them all back to back to back. Like I said, four episodes, first three about 20, last one's 15, and it's made up of five, you know, short films, let's say, within it that are...
I was going to say, I'll tease it. So like, as we said, this first one is this romantic sci-fi comedy thing. The second one is a medieval time travel family drama. The third one is a sort of comedic, kind of inspired by The Talented Mr. Ripley, like a thriller, but with a comedic element. And then our last episode is our potpourri episode. So we ended up taking a couple of shorts that we had produced. And one of them is a kaiju short, so like inspired by Godzilla. And the other one is basically Evil Dead in Port Hope. It's like a awesome ghost story. Yeah.
Okay, before I let you go, one last thing, and Aaron, just try to do quick if you could, just because
we're
out of time. Thank you. Where can anybody find your productions? Where they want to look at? Maybe get a hold of you.
Sure. Well, the easy answer is www.twoblueshirtsproductions.com. That's our website.
Perfect.
And that's the best way to get a hold of us. Yeah, and you'll see a bit of our stuff there, like you see our reel. But you know, we chat with us, and we'll send you lots of more stuff to see. So.
Thank you, guys. It's been a blast as always. I'll see you soon.
Thanks so much for having us.